Shalom Yehudim, Shalom Bnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the second day, Tesvav Be'iyar Tavshin Ayin He, Parashas Behar, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 3 May 2015. Webcasting from the land that drives men crazy. I mean that, really. Adolf Hitler and everyone who thought like him in his day were plainly out of their minds, with hatred and falsehood, fantasies of Jews doing evil that had no anchor in truth and reality. And it's the same today. Today we read about Jimmy Carter's latest visit, his latest performance. He went to Ramallah, smiled, and shook hands with the number two in the bloody Fatah cult, Mahmoud Abbas, and of his rival for power, Khaled Mashal, the Hamas headman. Carter said he is strongly in favor of the peace process. I read that and had to shake my head. My eyes went blurry for a moment. What? I think in the modern age of amazing communications equipment, we can actually see men such as Carter acting out their anti-Jewitis before our very eyes. Khaled Mashal is in favor of the peace process, he said. This would be like Carter in the 1920s going to Moscow, meeting with Lenin, and coming back with the idea that Lenin was a liberal Democrat, a free market capitalist, and America should get along with him. Who does not know that Hamas, its very essence, is opposed to the peace process, peace for Israel? It is shamelessly open about that and has been since the first day of its evil existence. What is going on in the mind of a Jimmy Carter when he talks this way? Has he no integrity? Has he no commitment to the truth? This is a guy, as they used to say, who's just off his rocker. Like Hitler and all dizzy Jew haters, Carter's mind goes like the old pinball games tilt and shuts down when he thinks of Jews. The very thought of Jews for such men seems to short-circuit the synapses in the brain, and he becomes blind to reality. He is a slave of his hatred of the Jewish people, but he's back in the country, meeting with such as Abbas. Israeli officials have refused to meet with Carter. He's traveling with the former prime ministress of Norway, surely one of the most monolithically anti-Jew societies in Europe. With so little history of Jews actually living there, these Norwegians seem to be just the product of their not-too-distant past as pagans, and their, relatively speaking, recent conversion to Christianity, with its undeniable chapters and verses of hatred for guilty Jews. Jimmy Carter, for sure, remains an active Christian as he experiences that religion. A few years ago, there was a story in the news of audio tapes of Jimmy Carter, Sunday school preacher in Plains, Georgia, teaching his church's children of the perfidy of the Jews, and in such a way it was not a historical narrative for him, but current events. And what does Israel have to say about this man and others like him? Official Israel shuns him, but does not mark him for the classical, stereotypical Jew hater that he is. There is something timeless about this behavior. The very idea of Jews and the undeniable reality that they are not only still around, and after centuries of hell at the hands of lunatic Jew haters, they have carried out the prophecy in their Bible of returning from exile and restoring their ancient homeland to life. Men like Jimmy Carter cannot deal with this. Yes, he attended Annapolis and studied nuclear engineering, but he remains a peanut farmer and mired in the mentality of mankind in the distant past. For there's little difference between 21st century Jew hatred and, say, 14th century Jew hatred, when in the years 1348, 1349, the Black Death devastated Europe. Some estimate a third of the continent perished, and it was a particularly terrible death. And the people at the time blamed the Jews for poisoning the wells and butchered them by the thousands. And of course, looted their homes of all valuables as well. They moved into their homes, besides butchering the family first. I once worked on a documentary film about the Jews of Greece and interviewed an Auschwitz survivor who, after liberation in January of 1945, returned home to Salonika, in northern Greece, which was the bastion of Greek Jewry, and he found a Greek family living in his home, sitting in and using his furniture, who refused to leave when he showed up. And in his situation, alone in the world since his wife and daughter were gassed and cremated at Auschwitz, and no family members, and with no help from the Greek authorities, there was nothing he could do, and walked away and made his way to America. That's how it's always been. One of the commonly overlooked facets of Jew hatred in history is not only that are Jews murdered, they're stripped of all their possessions. Before World War II, Vienna was maybe 25% Jewish. Just like New York in mid-20th century, Jews in Vienna had businesses and homes and synagogues, department stores, doctor's offices. But today, all those buildings are in Gentile hands. Most of their owners in 1939 were exterminated. And that's what Jimmy Carter wants to happen to Israel, God forbid. By the way, I have a piece on the AmericanThinker.com website today called The Two-State Solution Deception. This anti-Semitic man, Carter, is saying Khaled Mashal wants peace, but Netanyahu does not. This is like being in a state of permanent intoxication that messes up your vision, blurs your vision. Hamas is, even by the notoriously anti-Israel State Department, known as a terrorist organization, a criminal enterprise of murderers who are millionaires many times over because they're supported by Muslim billionaires in the Middle East, for whom Jew hatred is the nuclear core of their religion. Truly, in a Marxist sense, it is the opiate of this people. Marx said that about all religions, and Islam, which means submission, may fit the bill in the best way. Islam dulls the mind. In the Far East, there are statues of the Buddha, which are known to display a diamond in the forehead, symbolic of the third eye of wisdom. And how different is the Muslim religionist who assumes at prayer the position of a slave, his face pressed to the floor, the forehead pressed against the floor, which piety over time leaves a permanent black and blue mark and flattens the forehead. In the very spot of the third eye of wisdom, they blind themselves. Islam is a form of anti-Semitism. So much of it is plagiarized from Tanakh. It's a kind of copyright infringement, intellectual property theft, which fits that age-old midrash beautifully. Ishmael is called a thief. It's his essence. That's from like the 6th century. Indeed, into the 20th century, the Middle East was plagued by roving bands of Bedouin who thought nothing of armed robbery when coming upon a caravan of innocent travelers. Film archives contain old black and white footage from a century ago of such Arab marauders. And as the Arabs' livelihood then was conscienceless theft, burglary, armed robbery, so Muhammad less invented a religion than stole the religion of the Jews and perverted it. And so Jimmy Carter and other Western Jew haters in our time, look at our plight, surrounded on three sides by 550 million mostly Muslim Turks, Iranians, and Arabs and Sees, them wanting peace with Israel, but Israel not wanting peace with them. And certainly not doing right by the victims of their Zionism, the authentic archaic Palestinians who appear nowhere in the Bible. This Sunday school teacher teaches his flock. Carter and Khaled Mashal and Mahmoud Abbas, they have the same view of Israel, which is positively starkers. As I show in my book, what Palestinian nationalism has accomplished is the turning of truth on its head. In the 1950s and 60s, the violence here was seen as the Arab refusal to allow Jews to live in peace in their own independent state, in their own ancient homeland. In 1970, though, the word Palestinian made its first appearance in a UN document, and the rest is history. Their greatest accomplishment has been turning the truth upside down. They refuse to let the Palestinians, the authentic ancient owners of Palestine, to live in peace and prosperity in their own independent state, in their own ancient homeland. Palestinian nationalism is the theft of the story of Zionism.
שיר המעלות ממעמקים קראתיך השם. שיר המעלות ממעמקים קראתיך השם. השם שמע, שמע בקולי, שמע בקולי. תהיינה אוזניך קשובות לכל תחנוני.
Speaking before of the bizarre pathways of old-fashioned Jew haters like Jimmy Carter, John Kerry was running his mouth the other day, last night as well, calling Israel's response to his and Imam Obama's plan for Iran, quote, hysterical. And I will want to know someday what was running through Kerry's head when he said this. Surely he knows the plan, as described in Tehran, is not the plan he has in mind. And in any case, how many times does a Western state make a deal with Iran Iran of the Ayatollahs, that it has kept. Everyone these days knows Einstein's formula for insanity, doing the same thing again and again, hoping for a different result. But that's a standard operating procedure for John Kerry, which tells us he is, according to Einstein, insane. He is the hysterical one. He was interviewed yesterday on Israeli TV on Channel 10, in an excerpt, the full one's to run tonight, from the State Department, and he pitched a scenario in which the P5 plus one countries will be in such control of Iran's infrastructure they never will be able to build a bomb. He said he believed that where we're heading will protect Israel, not for 10 years, but forever. This is the guy who a few years back was patting Bashar Assad on the shoulder as a potential partner of the U.S. in the Middle East. This man has no judgment. John Kerry is in a class with Hillary Clinton as an abyss of ambition unmatched by any merits and qualifications for the job of Secretary of State. John Kerry entered posh Yale University in the fall of 1962. Hillary Rodham entered posh Wellesley College for Women 3 years later. Both of them have spent almost all their adult lives in politics, never in the private sphere. Kerry really seems to have suffered from a spiritual tidal wave of ambition to do what he did to gain attention in the early 1970s as the leader of Vietnam vets against the war. He was the male counterpart to Jane Fonda. She flew off to identify with the communists in North Vietnam, and Kerry flew off to meet with the Viet Cong in Paris. He smeared rats in arms in Vietnam as war criminals. There's good reason to believe, too, that his service in the military in Vietnam was calculated from day one to launch his political career. There's reason to believe his medals and commendations were phony. And then as a senator in Washington, what did he ever do or say that was memorable? One of his critics said his greatest accomplishment was his consistency. He was wrong on every foreign policy issue. As he rose to become chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, largely on the strength, I think, of his physical presence, his height, his posh speech, and baritone voice. Underneath, though, he remains an empty suit. Like Clinton, with a record of accomplishments, no record of such accomplishments, no memorable opinion pieces on foreign policy. Empty suits, they are representative of the time. They are the rotten fruit of the lunatic 1960s. And in a way, though he was a boy at the time, so is Barack Obama, having later on befriended Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, two of the most reprehensible members of that generation. This was the baby generation, baby boom generation, my generation. At the end of World War II, there were 11 million men in uniform. Peace with Japan was signed September 2, 1945, and within 24 hours, these millions began to demobilize, take off their uniforms and go home. The government didn't want to pay for them one day more than was necessary. These young men went home, married, and 9 months later, the delivery rooms in hospitals all across America were full steam ahead, 24/7, with babies being born. America was then not only the victor, but the only country left intact, its factories, its industrial plant, unlike Britain, France, Germany, Japan, all in ruins. The U.S. was rich and ultimately spoiled. They said the baby boomers were the best generation at the time. That's what they told us. I think, to be shipwrecked in the age of the 1960s with too much sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The 50s and the 60s was the golden age of television, during which a handsome John Kennedy defeated a dark and foreboding Richard Nixon. Famously, those who heard their debate in the campaign in 1960 on radio thought Nixon won. Those who watched Kennedy on TV thought he won, and thus was born the age of images on television. And thus was the path begun toward the rise of Barack Hussein Obama, who was a wizard of speechifying with his teleprompters, spewing bromides but doing it with such confidence and flair, sounding white, dramatically pausing here and there. Talk about an empty suit. As the culture has grown ever more vapid, So its leaders are underneath. Nobodies. No original thoughts, no strong values, no principles. That was the word on Hillary from her boss during the Watergate investigation. The woman had no limits to her desire. What mattered was the goal, and to hell with the law. This from the recent valedictorian at Yale Law School, where she met Slick Willie. Soulmate in ambition to make it big in politics, and to hell with principles and beliefs. Policy is not important. I don't think any of these three, Obama, Clinton, Kerry, believes in anything except their own success. Kerry is no more a judge of the Iranians than he was of Bashar al-Assad. Unlike other senators who succeeded in business before entering politics, Kerry has been a public servant, like Bill Clinton, all his life. None of them cares about the American people. All they care about is themselves.
שבת קודשך, שמו שבת קודשך.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Indeed, the workings of mind infected and paralyzed by hatred of the Jews leads to fantasies of evil deeds they commit and the inversion of notions of good and evil. Carter sees in Khalid Mashal a man ready for peace and sees Prime Minister Netanyahu as his opposite, who does not want peace. And now we learn of a play, a piece for the theater, created by the Freedom Theater Company, established in 2006 during the Second Intifada, and it's located in Jenin's Unwa area, and the theater sees as its mission, quote, to generate cultural resistance through the fields of popular culture and art as a catalyst for social change in the occupied Palestinian territories, close quote. The key word here is resistance, which is code for resisting the right of the Jews to be free. This theater group is, of course, funded by Western charitable organizations, and the play they have created is called The Siege, and it's about to be performed in several cities in the UK, in London, Leeds, Birmingham, Nottingham, and Glasgow, and it presents its vision of the 39-day siege of the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem in 2002, when scores of the Sons of Desert Marauders, disguised as Palestinian freedom fighters, held out in that church against the IDF while holding 200 priests, nuns, and civilians inside as hostages for over a month. They ripped up Bibles to use as toilet paper. They used the baptismal font as a bathroom sink. They placed 40 bombs all around the sanctuary to deter an IDF raid until, after 39 days, a deal was worked out to free their hostages and let them be taken out of the country and sent into exile. According to one report on this theater event, a central character in the play is Ibrahim Abayat, who, 3 months before the siege, was responsible for the murder of an Israeli businessman, Avi Boaz, Hashem Yikol Damo, who had done business with the people of Bethlehem for years and was a known advocate for them and the so-called Palestinian cause. No matter, he was murdered. And of course, given the production by this theater group, funded by European anti-Jews, the play will not shine a spotlight on what these evil barbarians, those PLO thugs, were who held all these people hostage and left the Church of the Nativity a shambles. The play, for sure, will be like the opera by John Adams called The Death of Klinghoffer, not The Murder of Klinghoffer, in which, again, the evil ones will be objects of sympathy. Sympathy for the Devil. That's the title of a chapter in my book for the year 1969, when the Rolling Stones sang a song with that name at a concert in California during which a drug-crazed member of the audience was killed during the performance by a member of the gang of borderline psychotics, aptly called the Hell's Angels. Sympathy for the Devil is what the Palestinian National Movement has been all about. That was quite a year, 1969. There was the Bacchanalian drug and rock music festival called Woodstock, and there was the landing of the moon, landing on the moon by men. And there was also the initial outburst of the Gay Lib movement, meant to throw holy water on sodomy, and the first mention of the Palestinians in a UN document. What a year. Wasn't that a time? And of that time, one of its lasting products has been the Palestinian cause, which reverses the polarity between good and evil, between bullies and their victims, between the good guys and the bad guys. It's all messed up. Khalid Mashal and his Muslim brothers want peace, says Jimmy Carter. Netanyahu and the Jews do not.
Mm-hmm. המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו עם חול זרענו וחספנו יער בכחול וככוכבים בלילה המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו עם חול זרענו וחספנו יער בכחול וככוכבים בלילה יום פנה כצל תומר אקרא לכם עליי גומר אמר שומר אתה בוקר וגם לילה המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו זרענו וחספנו יער וכחול וככוכבים בלילה המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו עם חול זרענו וחספנו יער וכחול וככוכבים בלילה צדקתך כהר תבוא על חטאי עבור תעבור כיום אתמול כי יעבור בשמועה בלילה אנחנו בידך כחומר
Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Eretz Yisrael.